Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op's online radio network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, and joining us today, as usual, is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm just admiring how you're just saying that intro consistently. It's practically as if it were coming from a tape. And no, folks, this is Scott live. He's just got that riff down good.
I do. Well, when you do something 278 times like we have, you tend to either get good at it or get fired. and you know, I think that's really an important lesson and something that we may not really emphasize as much as we should, and the fact that what we practice, we get really, really good at. And if we practice good health, we'll get very good at it. If we practice poor health, we'll get really good at that. And, of course, our mission is to restore vitality to you. And that means pointing out the areas where you're digging the hole deeper or digging the grave deeper, and then pointing out ways that you can stop doing that, and then pointing out ways that you can fill it in so that you're not getting worse and worse and worse. And that's really been the focus of our last couple episodes and the next couple as well, because it's not just what we do to ourselves, it's also what we do to the planet, or more specifically, to our children. And we've been talking about some toxic things that are way worse that we do to our kids than letting them gnaw on lead-painted toys, which
indeed
was used a little while ago.
Yeah, it does this, the whole scare, how the bad Chinese manufacturers are killing American children by shipping the toys that are painted with lead paint. And then you find out, well, actually, it's not the manufacturer's fault. They will make for you whatever you specify. And so it was the American corporation Mattel that was specifying cheap paints. And the Chinese manufacturer is sort of like any weapon or tool. You know, it's not good or bad of its own accord. It just simply does what you tell it to do.
That's right.
So if you specify a deadly product, you get deadly product. If you specify a healthful product, you get a healthful product. And you need to decide what you want. And it's your fault. You're the parent. Mattel was the parent in that situation. They spec'd it. They got exactly what they ordered.
Yeah.
And then they point the finger at the tool, saying the tool did it. You know, it's sort of like saying the gun killed the murder victim. I hear it a lot. The car hit the pedestrian. Well, yeah, that's what's on the outside, but the car didn't do anything. The driver did it.
Actually, a friend of mine has this great saying, which is, nothing works. And I looked at him the first time he told me that, and he says, with his puzzled look, right? And he says, well, look at the car. Is it working right now? No. No. Will it ever work? Yeah. When? When I get behind the wheel and turn it on and start pushing on the gas and the brakes and turning the wheel, right? Mm-hmm. So he says, nothing works till you work. And,
yes,
of course, that the car could never have hit a pedestrian if there wasn't somebody driving it.
Yes.
And the Mattel would never have had lead in their paint if they hadn't have said, we want 10-cent toys so that we can sell them for $20.
Well, the end result is a profit decision, but the cost decision is where they have did it. They've done it.
Yeah. So we've got a few more items that we want to talk to you about that will be actually pretty shocking when you think about it in terms of what we're doing to our kids.
Yes. I would like to stick in this word, which is overprotectiveness. Mm. And the overprotectiveness comes from a place of fear and comes from a place of ignorance. And perhaps it's a disinformation too, and I want to start it with this. When the advertiser wants to advertise his product, he usually tries to do it through fear, because fear is a very strong emotion. And so when you're afraid to of something, you will probably use it. And the best example would be getting an umbrella because it's going to rain. Or
there's one cloud in the sky, so we'll bring an umbrella.
Well, you know, it's there's a storm coming. Buy my umbrella.
Right.
Right. But the example I would use is the antibacterial, the germophobia. I mean, there are people practically neurotic over germs. And yet, what's becoming of us, especially of our children, is that they are they're developing sterile gut. You know, the illnesses that are now developing are practically caused by the lack of healthful microbes in our environment.
So we're basically assuming we've actually taken it far, far beyond normal. Like you can be in an environment that has a lot of bad bacteria and stuff like that, and of course it's going to cause a strain on your system. But that's not what most of us have. Most of us have an environment that is so sterile we're not exposed to
enough.
Like, when was the last time you walked on the grass in front of your house with no shoes on? You know,
well, I wouldn't want to do that because my neighbor has sprayed it with 2,4-D. But, you know, visualize some Stone Age situation, a cave. And in the cave we have mothers and little children and dogs and puppies and whatever else underfoot, everything peeing and crapping on the floor of the cave, right?
Yeah.
And it's all living together. Or even just 300 years ago, the kitchen where the child, the infant, is crawling on all fours on the kitchen floor among the kittens, puppies, and chickens.
Yeah, we had a lot of exposure.
Well, and he's exploring the world with his mouth. That's what children do. So he's actually, you know, everything he touches, he sticks in his mouth. So, you know, by the time a natural child is 2 years old, he's either dead from the infections he picked up or his immune system is beautifully strong.
Right, right. You remind me of a friend of mine whose wife, when she was a child, her mom took her to every child in the neighborhood that was sick. And
yes.
To play with it.
The chicken pox parties, yeah?
Yeah, and he says she has never been sick in the 15 years that he's known her. So she has a very, very strong immune system because she's been exposed to... It's like a muscle. You have to exercise it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
If you're in an environment where you don't have any bacteria... Well, it's like you said, we have bacteria on our skin and we have bacteria in our stomach and in our intestines and all over the place, which have jobs to do, and if we kill them all, they can't do the jobs. And it's kind of like if you're building a skyscraper and you keep killing the guys that are bringing the steel and the wood and the metals and the nails and the welding iron, you know, oh, there goes another construction worker, kill them, you know, and then you wonder why the building doesn't get built or falls over, right?
I don't know if that's a great example, but I would like to for instance, point out the gringo who just traveled into, well, let's just say somewhere, South America, right? And the first thing that we hear about is this Montezuma's revenge. You know, gringo gets the runs. Well, the primary cause of that is not that the Mexican kitchen is dirty, which, whatever that is, but the problem is that the gringo's gut is not strong enough to deal with the microflora or bacteria that are living on Mexican food. Otherwise, the Mexicans would be sick of it. They're not. They're living there merrily. So it's actually a clear evidence of the deficiency of this overly sterile industrial society lifestyle, where, yes, we have managed to prevent some communicable diseases, and I acknowledge that there's such a thing as getting cholera or dysentery, but you usually get those if you're malnourished or otherwise damaged. If your gut is strong, you're fine.
Right. So let's talk about some of the things that we give our kids. That's okay. So what's the first thing we want to talk about?
I would say the antibacterial soap. You know, it's this crazy scare of the flu that has, in every silly kindergarten and every place, there are these bottles with this hand cleaner, alcohol-based hand cleaner, or antiseptic soap. Now, the first thing that you want to know is that no soap really kills 100% of the microbes. What it seems to... No. No, this has been shown and documented. And here's the sad thing. It kills the weaker, beneficial ones, and it leaves behind the more deadly ones.
Also, kind of like all the dandelions that seem to show up in my yard.
Yes. Yeah. The thistle, the dandelion, and the portulaca, the pigweed, those survive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not funny. So, you're doing two things to the body. You're depriving it of the good guys, and you're double dosing it with the bad guys.
Right. And we think what we're doing is protecting our children.
Right. Or the other would be the chlorine-based kitchen counter wipes. I mean, it's totally appropriate to try and kill off salmonella, because salmonella is not a pretty thing to deal with.
Right.
So, yes, I acknowledge that, yes, we should treat raw chicken meat as probably exposed to salmonella, and therefore we should always cook it, and we should definitely sterilize the surfaces that it touched. You know, I agree with that idea.
Because we're not talking about 100% of the bacteria around us being beneficial. We're just talking about the fact that a lot of the bacteria that we have that is beneficial is getting decimated and destroyed, and that's affecting our health.
Right. So there we go. That's the first thing. Do not overwash things. Do not over-sterilize things. Do not panic over the minute exposure. I mean, children are supposed to exchange bodily fluids by kissing each other, you know. There is supposed to be a natural transfer, because that's how we strengthen one another. So banish the antibacterial soap. It's useless. Or, I should say, it's counterproductive.
Right.
So here's another one. Fluoride. Fluoride in the water. Now, there goes another protection. It's supposed to protect your child from cavities. Now, there are so many studies that show that fluoride actually causes significant damage from dysfunctional thyroid to nerve problems and other issues. And yet... fluoride has been, it's a byproduct of the nuclear industry, of the uranium enrichment and all of that. And I don't know, it was a devilish invention. I don't know, maybe they were trying to find some way to get rid of all the fluoride that they were producing, and they decided that putting it into drinking water was the perfect way to do it. I don't know if I could dare to think that they... controllers aren't that sinister, but it's possible that they are. Regardless, I believe that there is no truly scientific evidence that suggests that adding fluoride to drinking water will actually prevent cavities. I think the cavities are actually caused by decalcification of the teeth rather than the absence of fluoride.
On that note, I saw a very interesting video the other day about someone took an egg, a hard-boiled egg, mm-hmm. and they put it in a bottle, a can, a glass of Coca-Cola.
Oh, dear.
And they left it for quite a while, like months, and I don't know if it was a year, but it was quite a while. And when he pulled it out, he was bouncing it on the tabletop, because basically all of the shell had...
Decalcified. It went into liquid.
Yeah, and then when he poured it out, you could see it all, this grunge on the bottom that was from the... So basically he was saying, if you're just drinking Coke or Pepsi or these sort of things every day, you're going to be just ruining your teeth.
And your bones.
And your bones, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens to your bones because of the overly acidic, you know, it's the phosphoric acid in the soda drinks that does this. Yeah, I mean, Coke will digest a steak and it will definitely decalcify an eggshell. It's more complex than this, you know. It's the entire diet. We've talked about it earlier when we talked about the metabolic type, where we have different body types are balanced either through a diet that's richer in the fats and proteins or in the fruits and complex carbohydrates. And if you don't match the diet to the body type, you end up imbalancing. Is that the proper word? Setting the body out of balance. And when that happens, then your natural mineral sink, which is your bones, will have to release the minerals as a buffering agent into the body fluids. So that's where osteoporosis comes from. It comes from a body that's been consuming incorrect foods. But that's getting me off the track here.
I was actually going to say a couple quotes about fluoride that I've come across.
Yes, please.
One is Albert Schwartz, PhD. He said, fluoridation is the greatest fraud that has ever been perpetrated, and it has been perpetrated on more people than any other fraud has. He's a microbiology PhD. He discovered streptomycin, and he was a Nobel Prize winner. And then Dr. Charles Gordon Hayde said, I am appalled at the prospect of using water as a vehicle for drugs. Fluoride is a corrosive poison that will produce serious effects on a long-range basis. Any attempt to use water this way is deplorable. He's a former president of the American Medical Association.
Yes.
Then in January 2011, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control issued a startling report that admits 2 in 5 children in America show signs of fluoride poisoning, streaking, spotting, or pitting of teeth due to dental fluorosis. The agency concluded that fluoride levels need to be lowered in municipal water supplies, reducing fluoride to 0.7 milligrams per liter. The previous upper limit was 1.2 milligrams per liter. This ends over 5 decades of the U.S. government recommending up to 1.2 milligrams of fluoride in every liter of water. But even the new lower levels are still more than enough to cause serious harm to children. And when mothers make infant formula using fluorinated tap water, they inadvertently poison their infants with hundreds of times the level of fluoride that would normally be found in healthy human breast milk. So, pretty damaging.
Well, there it is. And yet, the industry keeps ignoring these and lobbying at the political level and ignoring the actual science. It's very disgusting, actually. And yes, that's what's going on.
Yeah. So fluorine, which is made, which fluoride is made from, is the most reactive element on the planet.
Yes.
It's also the strongest free radical. And in the 1930s and 40s, scientists experimented with this element to create deadly nerve gases, rocket fuel, and radioactive U-235 for the A-bomb. It's just what you were talking about.
Yeah, that's from the, what's it called, the concentration of the uranium.
Yeah.
You've probably heard of depleted uranium, which is used which is used in weapons, because the depleted uranium bullets are armor-piercing, and they are just fantastically effective. Well, depleted uranium is essentially the leftover uranium from production of the concentrated, or enriched is the word, uranium. And they, you know, the enriched uranium has a lot of the 235 isotope, which is the one that's used in the fuel rods. And then the spent fuel rods are the stuff that's now giving the Japanese people the nightmares. Because they have stored all of the spent fuel rods on the sites at the Daiichi power plant. So their biggest problem isn't the actual reactors, which, I mean, bad news there, but on top of all of the reactors, they have this, I don't know what, 20 years worth of spent fuel rods stored on site, and they have to be kept cool, and it takes 20,000 years for them to actually completely deactivate.
Wow.
So, this is a sidebar. But anyway, the fluoride comes from that industry.
And, you know, it's not like there hasn't been a lot of studies done on this. And in particular, I mean, it's been tied to a whole pile of different diseases. But the one that we're most concerned about for the purposes of today's episode, our show, is the brain damage. And what they found is that IQ levels were significantly lower in children who had been exposed to fluorides in all age groups versus kids that hadn't been.
Yes.
And this was published in Effects of Fluoride Exposure on the Intelligence of Children in 1995, so 15 years ago. Further studies proved the neurotoxicity of fluoride, and they did a test on rats, experiments on rats, and they found that rats given fluoride in drinking water at levels that would be equivalent to what we were getting suffer neurotoxic effects that vary according to when the rats were given it. So it was different if they were given it as adults or as young animals or through the placenta before birth. And those exposed before birth were born hyperactive and remained so throughout their lives. And gee, don't we have this constant thing about kids being hyperactive and ADHD and all this sort of stuff?
That's right. And that is exactly what's going on. We're actually protecting our children into problems. I mean, this is what I'm trying to get across in this episode, is that this fear-driven consumption of stupid things is actually causing trouble.
There you go. So
okay, the third one I want to hit on is sunscreen.
Oh yeah, because the sun is really damaging.
No, it's a dangerous thing. Well, you could get sunburned, you know, that's a fact.
It happened to me.
Too much of a good thing. But the way to protect yourself is by wearing a shirt and a hat, not by slathering your body with goo that's toxic. That's the problem, you know. There are some sun protection factor, SPF, that are mineral-based, like zinc oxide, for instance. That's not toxic to the body. It's just like, you know, paste of chalk in a medium that you just simply slather on the body and it blocks the rays. So, yes, I'm not knocking the zinc oxide type of sun protection, but I'm talking about these other ones that will actually poison your skin and in turn also prevent the absorption of the UV radiation, which actually is very beneficial. It's involved in the production of vitamin D in the skin. So it turns out that we all, each one of us, should have 20 to 30 minutes of full sun exposure every day.
And actually, probably oftentimes we don't. I know certainly where I live, it's raining and cloudy all the time, so I may not quite get that amount of exposure.
Right, and you would probably be, even if you lived in a natural environment, in a natural life, you know, 500 years ago as a native living in there, you probably would be wearing some sort of a protective clothing because you'd be too cold otherwise.
That's right.
So you would be hiding in the shade or out of the rain's way, right?
Yeah.
So it's only natural for us to disrobe when it's sunny and sun ourselves, just like a lizard on a rock. And yes, we should not overdo it. And How do I best put it? It's a very smart thing to condition your child to sunlight, to give them exposure in the springtime, so that by the time the sun rays are really strong in the middle of the summer, that their skin has already developed a natural suntan. Now, we're not supposed to bake to the crisp, you know. We're not supposed to look like a piece of bacon. But we certainly are designed to be exposed. So what do we do?
Right, yeah. Well, what's been happening, of course, is we've got the cosmetic companies and very vocal dermatologists strongly advocating that these chemical sunscreens be heavily applied before we get any sunlight. And the paradigm that they put forth is that sunscreen would prevent skin cancer and protect your health.
And the opposite is actually the truth, right?
Well, that's what many scientists studying cancer have come to that conclusion. The use of sunscreen chemicals may be increasing the incidence of cancer, and that sunlight exposure may actually decrease human cancer rates and improve your health.
Right. So you know, here's probably the thing. The exposure to the sun will raise the vitamin D, so you're very likely to not die of things like lung cancer or breast cancer or other organ cancers. But yes, you do increase your chance of developing skin cancer. But I think that the risk of the skin cancer is lower than the risk of the other ones.
Right. Well, and the other thing is many commonly used chemicals in these sunscreens have strong estrogenic actions,
mm-hmm.
which cause problems with sexual development,
yeah.
and adult sexual function. So I can see why Viagra would like you to be spending your whole life putting lots of sunscreen on, because as you get older, you're going to have to use their product to get everything working the way it should be working.
Okay. It actually gets more complex than that, because if that happens before puberty, the boy may never properly differentiate, or his testicles will never grow, or his penis will be micro, you know, minuscule, too small. Not fun for a boy to grow up with a teeny weeny.
No.
That sort of thing will happen if you are sending the child into an estrogenic dominance. Because boys are supposed to be pushed by testosterone, not by estrogen. And it's not even good for girls, because if you push them with estrogen, they go into the puberty onset too soon, or much earlier than they otherwise would.
Right. So you talked earlier about fear, and of course one of the fears and one of the reasons why we were all concerned about skin cancer in the early days was because of ozone depletion.
Right.
And the fact that the ozone layer was thinner and we had more of this radiation from the sun coming through, and it would cause skin cancer. And so that was the question. Could this ozone depletion be the cause of the increased skin cancer rates? So Professor Johan Moen of the Norwegian Cancer Institute did a study, and he found that the yearly incidence of melanoma in Norway had increased by 350% for men and 440% for women from 1957 to 1984. He also determined that there had been no change in the ozone layer over Norway during this period of time. So his report was in the British Journal of Cancer, and he stated that ozone depletion is not the cause of the increase in skin cancers.
Something else did it,
and probably...
Was he able to find that or no? Not in this hypothesis, right?
No. He was just saying, you know, I'm going to look at cancer rates. They've increased a lot, but what happened to the ozone? Nothing. So there had to be something else causing it.
And it's probably I'd take a guess, a nutritional change, because this is a period from 1956 to 1986 or thereabouts. In those 30 years, we have had this phenomenal increase in the use of plastics, in the use of plastic bottles, in the use of fertilizers, in the use of herbicides, pesticides.
In the use of sunscreen. I can remember going to the beach, and when I was
child?
5 or 6, and my mom would be splattering all this stuff on me, and we made sure we did it. So I would suspect that if you looked at when the first sunscreen came out...
In the 50s, probably.
Probably in the 50s.
Yes. Yeah, I imagine. So it's collectively the industrial age lifestyle with its silliness, including the sunscreen, what shall we call them, a myth. Yeah, the sunscreen myth. Maybe it has prevented something, but certainly has not prevented the increase in melanoma.
Bizarre.
Right, yeah, which it's supposed to.
Yes. Well,
cool. So we've talked about fluoride. Hopefully, we've given you something to think about for that.
Well, we need to actually say something about that further, and that's this, Scott. Fluoride is really difficult to remove from water. So if your city is fluoridating, you should lobby the city to abandon it. Very encouraging. For instance, in Canada, Toronto is becoming broke. And one of the ways of saving money they have just put on the things to do is to cancel the fluoridation program. They're just going to discontinue it as a cost-saving measure.
Wow.
I like that. But anyway, yeah. Lobby your city to stop it. If you can't succeed, or until you succeed, reverse osmosis is pretty much the only method that seems to pull the fluoride out of water.
Wow. So we stick something into water that you just basically cannot get out.
It's pretty hard. So drink RO filtered or distilled water.
And then we've talked a little bit about soap. And yes, it's important to be. Cleanliness is next to godliness, as the saying goes. But you want to make sure you're not killing everything that's supposed to be there to help, right?
Cool. And maybe just break the damn chlorine loaded sprays and all the wipe downs and all of that. It's overkill.
And then finally, we talked about what you're putting on your skin to protect yourself from the sun, maybe that is preventing the sun from helping you and also causing damage in other ways.
Right. So instead of a suntan lotion, use a hat. Wear a shirt if you need to get exposed, but actually do get exposed.
That's right.
In moderation.
And watch out, because they say 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. is when it's the most intense, so make sure during those periods of time you're under a tree.
Yeah, that's it. Take a siesta.
Trees are free.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we've come to the end of today's show, and we're going to talk about a few more things that are going to blow you away as far as what you're doing to your kids. It's probably not helping them, and is actually toxic to them and their future development.
Well, we don't say it to scare you. We say it so that we could actually help you.
That's right.
I really don't like to be a scaremonger. I really would just assume. Be selling you on today you don't need an umbrella. but we're in the business of selling umbrellas, so we're going to have to talk about the storms before they come.
That's right. And we got a lot of people talking about storms that are actually not coming. And we need to be able to discern what's important and what's not important in the information that we're getting.
Very well put, Scott. So if you want to know more, there's plenty of research material available on Life Enthusiast's website, life-enthusiast.com. Or if you want, we can help you sort out these problems, call us at 1-866-543-3388. This is Martin, Scott and I, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.